I call the meeting to order. My name is Myron Fox, and it's my privilege to be your moderator for this special town meeting. I declare a quorum to be present. Fire Chief has asked me to announce that your fire exits, emergency exits, are the two doors that you came in the back of the hall, and also you can walk up the stage either side and exit through the behind the curtains. At this time, I'll ask you to rise for a Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all. Thank you. The certified free cash, according to the town accountant, Barbara Chisholm, is $419,110. I have examined and found in order the call of this meeting, the office's return of service, and confirmation of mailing the warrant to all residents. I ask John Drabinski, Chair of the Board of Selectmen, for a moment to dispense with the reading of the call of this meeting, the office's return of service notice, and individual articles of the warrant.
So moved, Mr. Moderator.
Is it received a second? All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It's nearly unanimous. And there will be no coffee or snacks tonight because we're only meeting for one night. We have with us this evening our state representative, Tom Conroy. Would you rise, please? Thank you for coming. Bathrooms are located across the hall. There's extra warrants right up front in this box right in front of the podium here. If anyone needs one, please come forward. There's also some on the tables that through the door that you came in through. I'd like you to introduce you to the town officials, those of you who are unfamiliar. To my immediate right, the town clerk, Rosemary Harvell. To her right is the assistant town clerk, Judy Newton. And my left, chair of the Board of Selectmen, is John Drabinski. If you wouldn't mind just raising your hand when I call your name, please. Next to him is Larry O'Brien. And to his right is Bill Keller, the three selectmen. Town manager next to Larry is Maureen Valente. Down here at the table is Barbara Chisholm, our town accountant. And to my immediate left is Paul Kenny, our town council. At the view graph, or behind the view graph, I see Mary McCormick, the administrative assistant to the Board of Selectmen. Next to her, Patty Golden, supervisor of the Office of Selectmen. Elaine Jones, who's managed the town legal department. And our indispensable Mark Thompson, our IT administrator. Finance Committee, if you could raise your hand as I call your name. He's already standing. There's Bob Jacobson. Jamie Gossels, Sheila Stewart, thank you, Ralph Verney, Bill Nealon Jr., Marty Raganese, Vice Chair, Debbie Zerka, Jim Jacobson, one of our new members, and Chair of the Finance Committee, Chuck Woodard. Assistant Town Manager down here is Wayne Walker, and our Treasurer, Collector, and Finance Director, Andrea Turkelson. I'd like to just briefly review some of our town meeting procedures for those of you who are not regular attendees. For openers, I'm going to ask the five people upstairs in the balcony to come downstairs. We have no way of getting runners up there for the mic or count your votes. I need one or two volunteers to run some microphones along each side. Do I have any volunteers? There's a huge advantage to being a volunteer to run mics. You get to speak first if you raise your hand. Right there, thank you, and Patty Golden right here. Patty, do you know where the mics are? Great. Can you grab one and give one to this gentleman right here? There's no smoking in the hall. Please turn off all your cell phones. And each time that you're recognized, please give your name and address in order, when you're called upon to speak, in order to assure a clear audio tape record. If you desire to be recognized, all you have to do is stay seated in your seat and raise your hand. Do not stand at the side microphones or the podium microphone here. I will be able to see you in your seat. And if you're sitting near a standing microphone, after you're recognized, you may go there to speak if you like. Otherwise, just wait for one of our volunteer runners to give you a mic. Just wait 3 seconds before you speak and begin with your name and address. There's the reason why we need folks handing you microphones is because of the long aisles in this auditorium, and the people in the middle won't be able to speak without our doing that. All motions of substance, including motions to amend, should be delivered to myself and the town clerk in writing before they are made. Also, you should give a copy to the folks at the ViewGraph in the front of the hall. When you make a motion or an amendment, you must do so when first recognized. You cannot do one at the end of a speech. At this time, I will ask if you are not a registered voter to please sit in the back two rows of the hall. Anyone in front of that has to have a yellow card. And non-residents, by our bylaw, are not allowed to speak without leave of the hall, which would be a majority vote. I caution those of you who are here just for one article not to bolt the hall as soon as that article is finished. You'll be treating your neighbors disrespectfully by not listening to their articles when they have sat through your articles. I'm encouraging those of you who seldom speak at town meeting to do so. Please be reminded that if you present or speak on articles, the bylaw states that presenters will be allowed 10 minutes, a total, among all the presenters, and speakers will be allowed a total of 5 minutes, and you should plan accordingly, because requests to exceed those limits are not freely granted. Counting takes considerably longer in this auditorium because of the long rows with no aisle breaks. Please do not ask for a head count by tellers unless you're sure that I have miscalculated. I assure you that unless a standing vote is obvious, I will call for a head count by tellers. If you wish to vote on an article and you're now at home watching these proceedings on cable TV, I strongly urge you to leave well before the discussion on the article that you're interested in begins, so that you have adequate time to park, check in at the tables and at the side doors, find your way to the auditorium, all before the doors are locked by the police when we start a vote count. Too many people have been shut out of the votes because they've waited too long. The advantage to us is that when you do come from home, you can tell us the score of the Patriots game. I will announce the quantum of vote required for passage of an article before that vote. Please remember, it is our custom never to clap, hiss, boo, or make other audible noises for or against speakers before, during, or after their presentations. Speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, a speaker, a town official, or a town employee. If you do that, you're going to risk losing your right to speak on that article. My job as the moderator of this special town meeting is to ensure full and open discussion and fair play on each article. Your job as legislators is to ensure goodwill and respect for differing viewpoints. We are ready to move on to Article 1. Is there a motion on Article 1, please? Larry O'Brien, Board of Selectmen. The difference between the article that you see up on the ViewGraph and what you saw on your warrant that was mailed to your house is that there is now a sum of money stated in the motion, namely $860,000, and also the borrowing that appeared in the warrant in Article 1 has been eliminated. Mr. O'Brien for a motion.
Mr. Moderator, can I move in words of the article, or should I read this since it's different?
I'm afraid you have to read it.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Article 1, move to appropriate the sum of $860,000 as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee from Community Preservation Act funds for the purpose of purchasing in accordance with a purchase and sale agreement entered into pursuant to a right of first refusal exercised by the town under Mass General Law, Chapter 61B, in fee simple, 7.1 plus or minus acres of land with the buildings thereon known as the Young property located at 804 Boston Post Road and shown as lot 0015 on Assessor's Map K04.
Is that motion received?
Second page. Together with pre-development costs and all acquisition costs associated therewith to be used for community housing to be deeded to the town acting by or through the Sudbury Housing Trust established under Mass General Law, Chapter 44, Section 55C, for said purpose. The appropriation, therefore, shall be raised by transfer from the CPC FY08 reserves and the funding allocated to the community housing category.
Thank you. Is there a second? There is. Mr. O'Brien for a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for coming to this special town meeting. Article 1 is in front of us, as just read in the motion, because of the Board of Selectmen's decision to exercise our right of first refusal on the property known as 804 Boston Post Road. The town has been aware of the potential sale of this property for some time. We have monitored the property and the availability of it. Upon the property entering into a bona fide offer and a purchase and sale being signed, the town had the opportunity to consider for the stated price the opportunity to purchase the land. The Board of Selectmen decided to do so and felt that the land was suitable as a potential site for affordable housing. Now, the reason that we decided this is that the town has a shortage of affordable housing. The town has a shortage of housing that is suitably priced for first-time home buyers, especially for those newer employees here in Sudbury, younger employees here in Sudbury, be it working for the town and or employers in Sudbury or the surrounding area. As we all know, Massachusetts has a well-known, well-documented housing crisis that touches all corners of the Commonwealth. It has been the subject of many legislative and gubernatorial studies and initiatives, and we are losing jobs to other states because of the high cost of living here in Massachusetts. One of the solutions available to communities and to developers is a portion of the Mass General Law is called Section 40B, which allows developers to circumvent local regulations and to build housing, provided that a portion of the housing constructed is made available at affordable prices. Approximately 25% of the development would have to fall under this regulation. 40B is a popular development mechanism currently being used by developers with the current housing market the way it is, and it allows them to circumvent local zoning and to typically build to much greater density, constricted only by septic regulations and wetland regulations. And the potential for that to happen could very well be in place on 804 Boston Post Road. The other opportunity is if the town buys it and develops it in a more suitable way for the site, we could purchase the land and, working with an outside developer, put together a concept plan that we'll show you later, which will have approximately 16 units of affordable homeownership type housing. Now, since we are a vulnerable community, as you can see by some of the statistics up here, the law requires that a town has 10% of their housing stock designated as affordable. We currently are slightly below 5%. So if you do the math with approximately 5,500 units of housing, you can see that we have a ways to go. This makes it difficult for the town of Sudbury to fight off developers that may want to come in and put in a very large, very dense, very overwhelming type of development. Now, the town has felt, and when I say the town, I mean the planning board, I mean the Board of Selectmen, I mean the Housing Trust, I mean the Sudbury Housing Authority, I mean many people that you elect, many people that represent you many evenings at meetings throughout the year, and we have developed a fairly good plan, we think, for the development in a scattered type format of affordable housing. And the type of development that we're looking to do would be 4 to 5 units of housing that would represent approximately 16 units of housing. Now, can we go to slide number 2? The goals that we've put together have really come out of an effort that started back in the year 2000 when the town adopted the master plan. Out of that, a housing plan was developed that was accepted and adopted in 2005. At the 2006 town meeting, the housing trust was approved, and CPA funding has been made available to the housing trust so that they can begin to do their work. The housing plan and the master plan calls for single-family, scattered-type housing, small-scale housing, try and do it on town-owned parcels, and we'll address some of the questions that have been raised by people and in the newspapers concerning the Malone and Mahoney property, and we have the administrative capacity to oversee these type of projects in the form of our housing planner, the housing trust, and lottery monitoring services. Now, this article will provide the town's first opportunity to create affordable housing. There has been some created through 40B development by builders, but we would have control over the look and feel and density of this development. The hope is to showcase this type of development as a model. We're hopeful that we'll be able to incorporate some green building design, and all units will be available to households making at or below 100% of the Boston area median income, which is approximately $82,400. 14 units out of the 16 in the conceptual plan that we have would be for home ownership. 2 of the units would be owned and managed by the Sudbury Housing Authority for their rental purposes. We'll have a lower density than if a private developer were to come in because we've done perk tests on the land. We know that as a minimum, the land could probably support easily 25 units of housing. That's not buildings. That's 25 separate apartments or condominium type units. In our plan, a high percentage of the land will be preserved. We'll be respectful of the neighbors on all sides with significant buffers. And the entire development will be very tastefully done and maintained and be designed and developed in a New England style of architecture. If we can go to slide 3, please. Just to give you a little sense of where this is, it is 804 Boston Post Road. It is nearby the red button. Thank you. It is nearby Boston Post Road down here. The parcel itself inside the dark black line is approximately 7 acres. And currently it contains 1 single-family home, wetlands, and a large portion of the land is forested. It was enrolled in the 61B program. That's how the town has the right of first refusal. And over the summer, 2 public hearings were held where the selectmen discussed this parcel before making the decision to exercise our right to purchase it. And the feasibility analysis that was conducted on the land shows that the soils are very suitable for development. And if we can go to slide 4, to hone in a little bit closer, the parcel itself, again, Boston Post Road is down here. The concept plan would be something in the area of 4 to 5 units of housing developed in this sort of layout here. To the east, there would be approximately a 100-foot buffer. On the west side, there would be approximately a 40-foot buffer. There would be significant protections beyond the minimum requirements for the wetlands that are on the land, and there is the potential for a small park and some public access to be developed, as well as the owner of the property had developed some fairly extensive gardens that would need some repair and recultivation, but that could become some open space available to the community. The housing plan that I mentioned earlier that was adopted by the town has particular regulations that we, through the Zoning Board of Appeals, the Board of Selectmen, the Planning Board, and the Housing Authority and the Housing Trust ask developers to follow. This plan itself will follow all of those. Some examples would be that the 16 units would be housed in 4 to 5 structures, fairly low density. It would respect the wetland buffers. There, as I mentioned, there would be a potential for a neighborhood park or garden. We will follow the density requirements, the side setbacks. Open space will be greater than 50%. We will be using architecture in a traditional New England type plan. The height will conform to zoning standards and will incorporate common green space and green technology in the construction of the units. The units themselves would range between 1, 2, and 3 bedroom type developments, and the price points would be between $150,000 and $225,000. And again, this would be for those people looking, that would be potential first-time home buyers, earning in the range of up to $82,400, and they would be qualifying for mortgages and going through the same home ownership process that any of us that are homeowners in this room tonight have gone through. The project itself is a two-phase project. It's important to understand this is phase one. It asks for the funding to purchase the land in approximately a year to 2 years from now. There would be a formalized design that would come back because the article, as you recall, asked for $45,000 out of the total appropriation to be used for some design money. When that design was completed, town meeting would be asked to then appropriate community CPA funds for community housing that would then be used to subsidize to help bring these units down to the $150,000 to $225,000 price point. Those numbers will be presented by a member of the Housing Trust. And if we can go to slide five, now the issue is who will live here? Well, who will live here is friends, relatives, neighbors, people that we know. The data that I'm about to go through is data that's been developed by over 60 applicants for housing lotteries that the town has conducted within the last couple of years. So we feel that our data is current, we feel that our data is accurate, and we feel that it is a very significant data because it is information that people have provided us in their attempts to be successful winners in past lotteries. Those past lotteries have awarded housing, home ownership housing, to six different individuals, some of them married, some of them single, some of them single with children, some of them single with no children, a varied mix. The interesting thing is that all six of them had some sort of thread to the town of Sudbury. I believe five out of the six work in Sudbury. One of them was renting in Sudbury, was able to qualify for a mortgage and able to buy a unit. Three or four of the people that were winners of the lottery are employed by the town through either here, Lincoln, Sudbury, or Sudbury Public Schools. One of them is a local small business owner. So the type of housing that you may have had a notion of coming into town meeting hopefully will be realigned into understanding that this is housing for people that make an honest living, make an honest wage, work very hard. They just don't necessarily make a six-figure income. They can't necessarily afford a $400,000 or $500,000 or $600,000 home, but they are an integral part of our community. And the roles that we play, that they play in our community, will be enhanced if they're able to live in our community. If you had the opportunity to read the cover of the Town Crier 2 weeks ago, you would have seen the article on the top above the fold about a gentleman, Mr. Greg Gammons, who is an employee here at LS, a wellness teacher, and the impacts that being able to afford a home of this sort here in Sudbury has benefited his lifestyle and his wife and his small child. So that's an example of what we're trying to accomplish here. Some of the data, what will it do to the schools? What sort of impact will it have? How many people will it draw? 16 units is so much housing, et cetera, et cetera. The reality is that if you look at the financial impact here, what we've done is we've compared the proposal that is put forth in Article 1 for 16 units of housing versus what the parcel would support in the form of single-family homes, which would be three. The potential number of students, again, based off of data derived from the lottery information, information gathered from Sudbury Public Schools, information gathered from the assessor's office, indicates that there would be approximately 11 children, school-aged children, in the 16 units of housing, 5.4 in the three units of housing. The assessed value of the homes and how much real estate taxes they would generate, as you can see, are fairly close, 37 to 49. And if you look at the approximate cost of schooling, these children, 118,000 versus 56, What impact does that have on the school budget? We basically took these numbers here, applied it to last year's budget, and as you can see, it's a fairly negligible amount. I don't want to speak for the superintendent, who I believe may have a couple of words to say himself from Sudbury Public Schools, but in some email communication back to a citizen who had emailed to him, and Dr. Bracken, please correct me if I'm wrong, but it would be a negligible. These 11 students on the Loring School District or the Loring and Curtis Middle School would be of negligible impact, virtually none whatsoever. Do we have another slide, or does that... The other situation to look at is, if the land were not developed as three single-family homes, would the land then potentially be developed as a 40B? This can be very profitable. The law allows for a developer to make up to 20% profit, and soils perk out for a minimum of at least 25 units. So this just gives an example, one conceptual plan of what that sort of density could potentially look like, and we think that that would be more damaging to the site, more damaging with the traffic impacts and societal impacts on the surrounding neighborhoods, et cetera. More children, more traffic, larger footprint, wetland intrusions, loss of buffers, et cetera, et cetera. So hopefully you can see that 16 units would be far desirable to 25, and compared to three single-family homes, it is almost a wash in a side-by-side comparison. Some other questions that have been... how am I on time, Mr. Moderator? Two minutes? Mr. Moderator says I have 2 minutes. Thank you. The some other questions that have been asked either through the papers or emails or through questions that have been put forth to the town. Why doesn't the town buy this property for open space preservation? Well, the town has spent over $10 million on open space in the last 10 years. This is a relatively small parcel that does not necessarily work in the larger scheme of open space preservation, and the feeling is that in balancing the needs of the town between open space and housing and other municipal needs, this site is more suited towards housing and fitting in with the housing plans that we've developed. What is the town doing to prevent overdevelopment? Our recent open space efforts have focused on blocking and stopping the development of large-scale multi-home developments. We've been successful in that with the $10 million we've spent. This is a way to balance the need on the other end of the spectrum for affordable housing. Don't we have enough affordable housing? As we showed in slide one, we're not even at half of what we need to do to meet the state mandate, and the ability for our assorted town departments and school districts to attract qualified personnel and keep them for long periods of time as employees of the town of Sudbury becomes more and more difficult when commutes to the schools or commutes to their jobs in town start to average over an hour. And when job opportunities become available closer, we have lost, and all of our different departments can verify this, we have lost qualified people that either have rejected job offers or after a few years have taken job offers closer to home because of the length of travel and commute. And isn't the town looking at the Mahoney and Malone properties? Yes, we are. Those are two parcels that we own. The Malone parcel we purchased years and years ago. The Mahoney property we won in a lawsuit. And the bottom line is that both of those are currently being analyzed for potential uses. Housing is one of the considerations. Park and rec functions is another. There's also other areas outside of the Community Preservation Act that we are considering. And one of the most important, of course, is our future potential school needs. So those parcels are under consideration. This is an opportunity that's here and now, and we have a short window of opportunity, and that's why this article was put on the warrant for this town meeting. This is an article that's supported by the Board of Selectmen, the Finance Committee, Community Preservation Committee, the Planning Board, Sudbury Housing Authority, Sudbury Housing Trust, Conservation Commission, the Sudbury Historical Commission, and the Council on Aging. We all ask you to vote in favor of this article and to support affordable housing here in Sudbury. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Board of Selectmen, I assume, recommends approval of the article. Great. I'm going to open up a discussion. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 1? Yes, right here.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator, townspeople, voters. I'm Ian Feldberg, 24 Peckham Road, Sudbury, and I'm representing a group of abutters to the property. As you can see, the property has a lot of forest, greater than 90% of land. Is there a pointer? Is this the pointer? Surrounding community, Route 20, the existing house. A few remarkable features about the land. It is Wayside Inn Historic District. There are wetlands, vernal pool, a number of protected species, historical monuments. And abutting Route 20, also the grounds of 8 homes, or the homes within a community that complies with existing zoning. This is from the warrant, and we've already seen the surrounding community. This is the plan for the 16 townhouses, and I've taken the liberty of hashing out in red the wetlands to show the part of the land that's not usable for this housing proposed. So is this a suitable site? No. Less than half the land is suitable. There's lots of limitations, wetlands, vernal pool, building codes. An environmental impact study has not yet been carried out. There are rare species on the land, and you know, once it's carried out, there's likely to be further limitations. Ultimately, we're looking at a narrow strip of land in very close proximity to the abutters. What's being proposed does not conform to existing zoning. We believe that what is being proposed would cause distress to the existing neighborhood. From the warrant, there's this text. Let me read it. I've highlighted it. So by acting quickly, the town can prevent the possibility of such a development to 25-plus by a builder. And they don't want the overwhelming impact on both the land and adjacent neighborhoods, and we saw that in the very good presentation which precedes me. So, you know, in actual fact, if you look closely at this, we believe this is an overwhelming impact to the abutters. Here we have 4 houses and the proposed development. So 4 and then 16. Not very proportional. And the buffer, which in certain places, even in this early proposal, is being cut into significantly. The feed out onto Route 20 as well, which would be lower down over here, concerns us. There are busy roads, Peckham Road, and down below, another busy road where there are accidents. We've all heard about these accidents of cars trying to get through. And we're not quite sure what impact the 30-plus additional cars, which are being parked here, will have on this traffic issue. Project cost. So the warrant didn't provide detail of the cost. In actual fact, you know, there is a project submission form, which is very informative. Everyone can see it. It talks of the 860 purchase of land, which is why we're here today. But $5 million, you know, will be spent. That is what's in the proposal, ultimately, to finish this up by 2010. Where are the funds coming from? Well, you know, there's... you know, the town officials do opine that there are various sources, but you know, ultimately, you know, the bulk of it's going to come from you guys, resident taxpayers. So what are the problems? The land's not suitable. The environmental impact study has not been performed. This would cause an overwhelming impact on the abutters, regardless of whether it's 25 or 16, because for the abutters, you could see both plans. When we look outside our backyard windows, or kids are playing in our gardens, they'll be right up against the back of those buildings. Full funding is not secure or visible and could be very problematic. Marketability study has not really been performed. The Loring School...
Mr. Felber, how much longer do you have?
A couple minutes.
A couple minutes?
Less. I'll finish up.
Okay.
Loring School is already at full capacity when we do speak with teachers. They are very concerned about this. And ultimately, it's the best use of funds. We believe it's money down the drain. So in conclusion, vote no for the purchase of the property. This property is not suitable for this. It's not an appropriate use of our money. It's a bad business decision. The risks are very high for all of us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'm going to ask the 8 people up in the balcony to come downstairs. We're not going to be able to count your votes up there. All our counters are down here. So if you'll come in row 5, there are 8 seats in a row right here in the middle. And those people standing in the back, 3 or 4 of you, could you also come and sit down? There's many, many seats here in the middle. I have no idea why the middle is so open. Yes. Thank you very much. While we're waiting, let's have someone else who wishes to speak. Yes, right here in front.
Good evening, Mr. Moderator. My name is Michael Fee. I'm chairman of the planning board, but tonight I'm addressing the hall in my capacity as chairman of the Sudbury Housing Trust. That is the entity that would develop this young parcel for community housing if you elect to approve Article 1 tonight. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the Housing Trust, you may recall that in 2006, town meeting voted to accept General Laws Chapter 44, Section 55, which authorizes municipalities to set aside dedicated trust funds for the purpose of creating and preserving affordable housing. In 2007, town meeting again voted to fund the Sudbury Housing Trust with CPA funds in the approximate amount of $385,000. And that appropriation enabled us to begin the study of certain development projects and proposals, of which the Young Parcel is one. The current housing trustees are a diverse group, but we all share one goal, and that is the implementation of the town's affordable housing policy in a competent and reasonable fashion. And we have the names of the trustees up behind me. Peter Crow is a senior banker and a mortgage lender. I have a law practice focusing on real estate. Andrew Kay is a developer with a particular expertise in 40B developments. Amy Lepak is a local activist and a housing advocate. Larry O'Brien is our liaison to the Board of Selectmen, and Lydia Pastusik is a professional property manager and a member of the Sudbury Housing Authority. It has been a great education for me and an honor to serve with this very well-seasoned group of real estate professionals. And I can tell you that we have spent a tremendous amount of time evaluating this proposal, not only from the standpoint of whether or not the site is suitable, but whether or not the numbers and the economic analysis works for the town. Now, you may recall that this property was originally identified as suitable for a housing development back in 2002 when the town initially performed the Land Use Priorities Committee report. But it wasn't until 2007 when it was offered to the town under Chapter 61B that we really began in earnest to do a feasibility analysis. Since that analysis has begun, we've had the opportunity to consult with a number of professionals, not only from a design standpoint, but also from an economic standpoint. We've been able to perform soil testing on the site. We've been able to do an appraisal, and we've run a lot of numbers. And in sum, the Housing Trust believes that this is an appropriate site, that this site is fully capable of supporting the 16 proposed units, and we believe that the Trust is uniquely positioned to oversee the development of this project for the town. Now, as Larry mentioned, we're talking about 16 units as a concept. And at this stage in time, it's really just a concept. We've looked at a number of different designs, and we're hopeful that this amount of density is appropriate not only for the feasibility, the economic feasibility, but also in terms of its reasonableness on the impact to abutters and the neighborhood. Now, of the 16 units, we're envisioning that 11 of these will be offered to families at 80% of the adjusted mean income. That means if you have a family of four, your adjusted mean income is $66,000. That's 80% of the adjusted mean for the area. And that would enable folks in that economic group to purchase these houses with a subsidy from the town. The remaining five units, which brings us up to the total of 16, would be offered to families making up to 100% of the area median income, or $82,000. And we think that this is a group that we could also serve. And we're talking specifically about folks that, for one reason or another, are just slightly above the $66,000 cutoff. And we think that we need to be able to serve them as well. Now, the reason that we've had that we've broken these price points as we did is because not only do we believe that we can maximize the amount of state grants and funds available by structuring it this way, but also because we believe that adding the additional five units at 100% of AMI enables us to lower the project cost per unit so that we can get basically more bang for our CPA buck. Now, the budget projections that we've run are based on real current numbers, and it's based on an analysis of the Nike Missile Site, which is a town-sponsored community housing development in Wayland. I have about another minute, Mr. Moderator.
Yes, with the indulgence of the hall, it'll be one more minute.
Okay. As you can see, the estimated total cost for the development is $6 million. We anticipate approximately $2.8 million in sales proceeds, and that means a subsidy will be required of $3,200,000. Because we've structured it the way we have, we believe that state matching funds of approximately $1.4 million will be available. Tonight, we're asking you for $860,000 for acquisition of the land, and we reasonably anticipate having to come up with another $940,000 in order to make this project work. It's important to look at these numbers in terms of the unit cost. And if you divide $6 million by 16 units, you come up with $375,000. That's the total cost to the town for providing these units of housing. And Sudbury is responsible, under this scenario, for the $54,000 that we're allocating tonight. That's 860 divided by 16. Plus the additional $60,000 that we'll be looking for at another time. We think state funding of approximately $90,000 per unit is available, and if you take away the average sales price, we're looking at approximate cost per unit to Sudbury voters under the CPA dedicated funds of $113,000.
Mr. Thie, can you just wrap up, please?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Moderator. In short, we believe that any way you analyze it, $113,000 per affordable unit is an excellent way to spend your CPA funds. CPA funds are dedicated for this purpose. They are not going to raise anyone's taxes, and they are dedicated to providing and preserving affordable housing. We can't imagine any other scenario where you would be able to provide this many number of units at this type of development cost. We urge you to support the article.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard in Article 1? Yes, sir. Could someone bring him a microphone, please? Right there? You can.
My name is Robert Weiss. If you go back to the graph that shows the proposed development and where the other abutters are, I'd like to start there. The last person that spoke said that it's going to cost the town $113,000. But quite frankly, I live at 7 Lafayette Drive, and I built a $2 million house there. And I also had a deal with the lady that owned the Young property. She was originally going to give me first rights of refusal for that property, and I never would have spent $2 million building a house if I knew what was going to happen here. I understand that the alternative to the town is not a 40B. The alternative to the town, by the way, as far as the $113,000 cost to the town, which is purely speculative, there are about a dozen neighbors that have lived in this town for many, many years, paid their taxes, invested their hard dollars in this town, and they're going to be greatly hurt by this development. And everybody in this town would not like to have this in their backyard either. Very simply, if the town has any indication of what the real cost of this development is, I live in a $2 million house directly to the right of that development, and my property value will drop by $500,000 just like that if you vote for this. And you can like me or can hate me. I really don't care. But every single person in this room has the potential of being, I don't want to say raped, by the town of Sudbury. But we cannot allow this to happen. This can happen to you, and unfortunately, it's happened to me. I will tell you for a fact, guaranteed, that if the town of Sudbury does not get this land, if this proposition is voted down by the people of this town, and I hope to God you do that, because, quite frankly, if the whole town of Sudbury was allowed to vote in this arena today, if we all got ballots in the mail and we could send it back, they would never get anything that we know is egregious to us as a town. But the fact of the matter is, I'm going to lose $500,000 if this goes through. And, you know, I like the fact that there's wetlands there. I guess I'm a little bit better protected than the folks to the left. But if they want to give you this bullshit about $113,000.
Sir.
Okay,
one more word, you lose the mic.
Okay. It's going to cost a lot more than $113,000 per person for this development. I'm a developer, and I know whatever I build never costs what I tell you it's going to cost. And we... Thank you very much. I will also tell you that the person that is going to get this land, if this does not go through, will sign a guarantee to this town that there are going to be two or three house lots, and he's going to build decent housing and protect everybody on the left, right, and center. And we, as a group of people in this town, have got to get together and stop this nonsense, and that's not a swear, from happening. Everybody in this town knows that affordable housing is not in your advantage nor mine, and your taxes, I guarantee, will go up, and I guarantee my property will go down, and the people to the left are even worse off than I am. And in good conscience, anybody in this town that votes for this, I hope you wind up with this in your backyard, and I have nothing more to say.
Well, can you just give us your name and address?
My name is Robert Weiss, 7 Lafayette Drive, Sudbury, and I had the ability and the willingness to spend $2 million to build a house in this town, in a neighborhood that, well, it doesn't matter. I love the town of Sudbury. I pay my taxes. This is egregious. The town of Sudbury, the environment, the Conservation Commission, has had deeded to this town acres and acres of land that has nowhere to do with Route 20 and can be built on anywhere they want. I could show you places that could put 100 houses that won't affect anybody in this town. There's no need for the town of Sudbury to waste $860,000, never mind the cost overrides on their $100,000 or $113,000 budget, and the poor neighbors. There could be anybody in this room that are going to get hurt by this, and I hope to God that you all understand that if this was up to real town ballot, they would never win. Unfortunately, half the people in this room come here to every meeting to affect what they want to do. If we all voted possibly the right way, we wouldn't have any of this nonsense, and that's it. And thank you very much.
We have anyone else? Yes, sir.
Hi, Chris Morley, the chairman of the Community Preservation Committee. I have a brief role tonight to tell you that the CPC finds that this project meets the state statute and all of our requirements. Beyond that, if you read our committee report in the warrant. It goes into how we've spent over 5 years now with the CPA trying to build this kind of housing. We're just finally starting to have success. And we not only approve sending this before you tonight, but we very enthusiastically support it. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, in the second row there.
Laura Abrams, 24 Goodman's Hill Road. Could you tell me how this might affect buying the possible Johnson property that was on the town warrant last year? And I believe the town was looking at that as 40B units also, where it wouldn't have abutting neighbors and it wouldn't be directly on Route 20. Would this have an effect on buying that property?
Do we have someone either from CPC or town manager to answer that question? Yes. Mr. Morley, CPC.
Well, at this point in time, that land is not available to the town. It may be at some point, but it's not because of the death of the owner. The actual area of housing in that respect was right on Landham Road with neighbors across the street and on either side, so it's not really different. It's actually probably closer to neighbors than this project. But right now, it's not available to the town, so it's a moot point.
Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 1? Yes, sir, right there. Right over there in the middle.
Thank you. My name is Kurt Alexander. I live on Peckham Road in Sudbury. Can someone explain to me why it's desirable to have any low-income housing in Sudbury and what the 10% mandate from the state has to do with it? Do they have any leverage over us to force us to compel by a certain time, and what happens if we don't? Aside from the fairly specious arguments that Mr. O'Brien put forward to the potential loss of teachers from having to commute, what's the benefit?
Thank you. Mr. O'Brien?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The state, as I had mentioned, has on the books a statute called 40B, and essentially that says two things. One, that each community must have, as part of their contribution towards the overall Commonwealth, 10% of their housing stock certified as affordable. And those are some of the numbers that we've shown you in terms of price points. In the event that a community does not have 10%, you are then subject to developers being able to come in, purchase a parcel of land of virtually any size, and develop up to the maximum that can fit on that parcel of land. And in Sudbury, typically the restraints are septic, and the restraints would be environmental, so in terms of wetland, et cetera. If you can if you have enough area to build and you have the septic capacity, if you had a 1 or 2 acre parcel, and you could put 20 or 30 units on it, it's perfectly feasible and possible and allowable under the law. And the Zoning Board of Appeals really just has the responsibility for overseeing the project. They don't really, no one in the town has the ability to deny the project. If we do deny the project, typically the Housing Board of Appeals will override the town, and they have a strong history of doing that because they feel that the need for affordable housing outweighs towns denying these type proposals. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you. Hang on. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, on the aisle.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator, and thank you to the selectmen. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you, and more importantly, to speak to the residents of the town who are being asked once again to try to digest a whole lot of information in a short period of time and to make some important decisions that affect the community.
Excuse me, just
my
a moment.
My name is Michael Rogers, and I'm at 22 Peckham Road. I've been a resident of Sudbury for over 8 years. I'm married. My wife, Kimberly, is also here tonight. We have 2 children who are 10 and 8. We have a home on Peckham Road that we've been very happy with. We love the community. We've made many friends that we will have for the rest of our lives. My wife and I have been very active in the town. Kimberly has served in different capacities in the Newcomers Club and at Loring. I've coached town baseball and football and soccer almost since the day we arrived here. We hope to stay here for a long time into retirement. This sounds like a lot of you, I'm sure, and we are like a lot of you. The difference tonight is that my wife, my children, and I are the lottery winners. We are that anonymous square plot on the town's plan that stands to be the most affected by this. My neighbors listened to the town tell them not to worry, that this will be done in such a way as to not affect our property value or the ability to enjoy our property. So we waited until they finished to do our own assessment to find out from several real estate brokers and experts what the real damage is to the value of our property. And I can tell you that it's not particularly pretty. You can't leave the value of a person's property intact while you're trying to wedge 40 people into their backyard without an appropriate buffer. And every time a new version of this plan comes out, the plan gets larger and the buffer shrinks. I must say, the idea that these few people who I have never met could have such an impact on my financial security, and it's very disturbing. My neighbors and I have listened to and we've read how this plan is so good compared to the alternatives for the town and the abutters. They've tried to address the concerns of the abutters. This is not right, it's false, and again, this is troubling to me. They have not attempted to contact us. They've not attempted to view our property from our side, sit in our kitchen, stand in our backyard, and look at what the impact would be to us. I've always thought that the concerns of affected citizens would be a matter of greater importance to the people that we elected, and I was wrong. So I tell you this personal story not to get you to vote on my personal story, but to have the voters understand that people and livelihoods are affected. We are longtime citizens of this town, and we've been giving back to the town. And I think we should all expect more thought and consideration from our town planners. For some people, this is all about the support of 40B housing, regardless of the location, its effect on the surrounding neighborhoods, or the citizens of this town that are affected. And that's fine. And I can't pretend that even the fact that this is a badly ill-conceived plan is going to change your mind. The planners would also like to make this a referendum on 40B housing. Show us the personal side of the benefits of the program. It's the right strategy for them, and it is a situation that benefits the community. It's just simply the wrong property. It starts off at 7.1 acres and becomes a very thin, very tight, buildable area, totally inappropriate for the surrounding area and neighborhood. The whole landscape, look and feel in the surrounding area will be forever altered. The owner of this property wanted it preserved. We know that one of the prospective buyers wants to refurbish the existing house and donate the remaining property to the town. And I think that's exactly the kind of idea that makes most sense for this property and for this town. The property sits almost at the corner of Peckham and Route 20. This is a very busy intersection that's had numerous accidents. Right up the road at Horse Pond, at a very similar crowded intersection, we had an accident result in a death recently. Right now, the Peckham Road intersection is very difficult to navigate. The idea that we could put 16 new families trying to get on and off Route 20 right there is dangerous and not well thought out. For those of you in the Loring School District, the elementary school with the lowest scores in the town on state exams will now face further strain on classroom size. The financial cost of the town is high, and the planners have not been clear on the true cost of the whole project to the citizens of this plan. I believe that this plan is not what we need our elected representatives to come up with. There are certain standards that most of us in the community want for our town. To put 40B and low-income rental units in the middle of a single-family residential neighborhood is completely ill-conceived. It's the kind of thing that drives people away from Sudbury. It's the kind of, Mr. Moderator, I will just be another minute. It could happen to any of you, and this is not the type of town management we came to Sudbury for. This is not the type of support for the citizens of this town that we expect from our officials. So I ask you to vote no tonight, not because you believe or don't believe in 40B housing or low-income housing, but because we want responsible planning, we want less congestion, we want the town to concentrate on spending our tax dollars on the things that will make our quality of life better. We don't need them trying to wedge 40B and low-income rental units into appropriate places. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else wish? Yes, in the second row right here.
Thank you. I'm Lisa Eggleston, speaking on behalf of the Planning Board. The Planning Board supports Article 1 as it is consistent with the 2001 Master Plan and the 2005 Housing Plan, both of which recommend the acquisition of parcels enrolled in the Chapter 61 program for small-scale, town-sponsored affordable housing development. The Planning Board, through its representation on the Housing Trust, the Community Preservation Committee, and the Community Housing Committee, has been working towards the goal of identifying a parcel of land which could accommodate this type of development. We have also contributed to the promulgation of local 40B guidelines, and this project will enable the town to design the development to meet those criteria. The development of this property will result in a low-density development that respects the natural resources and historic nature of the area. It will benefit teachers, public safety employees, children of residents, employees of local businesses, and other first-time home buyers who desire to but cannot afford to live in this community. The town needs to be proactive in this regard because if left to private development, progress will continue to be unacceptably slow. We urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard? Yes, way in the back.
Ryan Clifton, 45 Mill Pond Road. I'm very much in favor of affordable housing in town because there are town employees and other people that really do need to be able to live much closer to the work, their working environment. However, in our own area, we are continually seeing smaller houses that could be affordable, probably in the $300,000 to $400,000 range, being torn down and replaced by million-dollar houses that just about fill the three-quarter acre lot. The other thing is, on the affordable housing that's being proposed, I'd like to know what procedures are going to be put in place to keep them affordable. Clearly, the 250 units that the town has for rental, the town can control the costs, the rental rates, and keep those affordable. However, if they are sold on a lottery basis, I'm very concerned that the owner may suddenly find they've really won the lottery, and that instead of being 200,000 when it's on resale, they become close to 500,000 or 400,000. And I'd like to know what guidelines can be put in place to make sure that these houses, if built, will remain affordable.
Thank you for the question. Mr. O'Brien, to answer it.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Clifton. The answer, and I neglected to include it in my presentation, is that the state sets the affordable housing rate. The numbers will increase slightly year to year, but as a deed restriction, that would be the only gain that the first-time home buyer would be able to see. And upon resale, they would only be allowed by deed restriction to resell the home at whatever the current state number was at that time. And those are set on various economic indicators and are adjusted periodically by the state.
Thank you. Does anyone wish to add anything new to the discussion? Yes, in the rear, in the middle. Could you stand up, please?
Mike Hollinger, 55 Washington Drive. Question on the financing aspects of it. It's a $6 million total project, and as I understand it, $1.4 million might be coming as reimbursement from the state, but my question and the rest of it from unit sales and Community Preservation Act funds provided by the town. My question is, how are the construction costs going to be financed until the out sales occur and until reimbursement comes from the state? Will the town be borrowing money to finance $6 million of costs until those unit sales occur and state reimbursement comes back? And is there any risk to the town in that regard? The second question I had, I think there was a slide up there attempting to analyze the financial impact on the town from the student standpoint. I think it was used 11 students, although I think the information indicated that there were 7 additional preschool age students. So is the real number 18 students, 20 students versus 5.4 students, or what's the real number and what's the cost impact of that? And then lastly, if the goal is to get to, 550 units, what are the other properties that have been identified, and do you know, have any idea when those properties might be available to fulfill the 10% requirement?
Thank you.
As an alternative to this one.
Thank you. Someone answer the question. Mr. Fee.
Three-part question. I'll deal with part one on the budget. As I said, the $6 million estimate was based on an analysis of the Nike missile site project in Wayland. I believe your question was whether or not there would be development financing involved that the town would need to be signed off on. The answer is no. Once the land acquisition is approved and the town allocates the funds for the pre-development costs, we would take this through permitting with a designated developer. In other words, we'd go through an RFP process, and a developer would be chosen to actually build the units, and any construction financing associated with that endeavor would be the responsibility of the developer. The school budget I can't speak to.
Thank you. Who's to answer the question about students? Mr. O'Brien?
The answer on the impact on the schools is that the estimates were taken from the lottery information that we had compiled that I had referenced. And the number of children that would be preschoolers would have virtually no impact on the schools until they were to reach the age of kindergarten. So we didn't.
No.
And the children that we're counting currently that would be in the schools would be moving up and on through the middle school and up through the high school, and, of course, it would be turnover in units. So it would be, you know, the same as any other home that was sold in Sudbury. It could be an empty home. It could be have 2 children. It could have 10 children. So it's very difficult to judge the numbers. So we took the best information we had based on the lottery information we've compiled over the last year and a half.
Mr. O'Brien, before you leave, the third question was relative to 550 units. Ms. Cadillac, you can answer that? Town Planner Jody Cadillac.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Thinking that question might be answered asked tonight, I did do a quick analysis. Over the past 5 years, you've seen me up here many times. We speak about affordable housing. We try to enact resolutions regarding affordable housing. We ask for CPA funds regarding affordable housing. And still to date, we've not produced one single unit. Mr. O'Brien, in his presentation, the second slide, did show the housing goals and the housing plan of the town, and it's a multifaceted approach. We are hoping to address the teardown issue, and that's called our home preservation program, where we will attempt to buy single homes, subsidize them down to the affordable housing rate, and then resell them to income-eligible buyers, and deed restrictions will be placed on those homes, just as the homes in this development. Those will carry over upon resale so that a new first-time home buyer will be moving into that home. The second strategy is called the small-scale development, of which this project is what we envision. Another strategy is the buy-down program, which we've utilized CPA funds, we've dedicated CPA funds to buy down condominiums in the 40B developments that we are going to start seeing in town. There are 3 of them in the proposal stage, and we've increased the number of affordable units in those developments through the buy-down program. And then the fourth strategy is to look at the larger town-owned project lands and try to develop some sort of housing on those, whether it's a small amount or whether it's in conjunction with another use. We're looking at the possibility of combining housing and recreation use on both the Mahoney and the Malone properties. That's the strategy of the town. That's the strategy that's been in place since the 2005 housing plan has been built. Since about the year 2000, I've been working with the Sudbury Housing Authority on trying to find parcels of land that might be suitable for affordable housing. and we've put a tremendous amount of effort into this, and everyone thinks that this property isn't right or that property isn't right, but there is another property in town that's right. There isn't another property in town. We looked at 194 parcels that were owned by the town. This was in 2003 with the Blue Ribbon Site Selection Committee. This committee put an awful lot of effort. It was a new committee. They had no ties to most boards, but they were looking to try to find land that was suitable for affordable housing. 194 parcels of land. They came up with a list that were town-owned land. They came up with a list of 12 parcels out of 194 parcels. Three of them are school parcels, and we've talked about them at town meeting before. The Nixon School, the Curtis School, and the fire station on Hudson Road. The DPW building on Old Lancaster Road is one of those 12 parcels. There's four parcels, Robbins Road, Wilshire Road, Old Meadow Road, and the Bushy property on Boston Post Road. Those are basically single-family lots that may or may not have the potential for four lots. And then there are four small parcels in the Pine Lakes area that are very small, would have significant development constraints. But again, we're pursuing those because we really have no other choice. In 2006, the Sudbury Housing Trust again looked at parcels, and we included tax foreclosure properties. And two properties were bid on at an auction held by the town in May of this year, and the trust did buy one. That's on the corner of Dutton Road and Pratt's Mill Road. The rest of the properties were all unbuildable. The Housing Trust is also working with the Sudbury Water District on one property that they own on Washbrook Road. This may also become a parcel that has a potential for affordable housing. And then, again, we spoke about the Malone property. But there really is not a great abundance of properties in town. We do feel that this property is appropriate, and we have done feasibility studies that show that. Thank you.
I'm sorry, did I hear a call of the question? Yes, does that receive a second? It does. For the guidance of the hall, if you have something new to add to the discussion, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four, five, six. I see six hands. The question has been called. It's a two-thirds vote. I will ask all those in favor of the call of the question, please signify by raising your yellow cards. All those opposed, it gets way more than a two-thirds vote. We will now proceed on to the vote of Article 1. Before we do that, let me ask again before this vote is taken. I will remind people not to bolt the hall. If you leave after this vote, we only have two more articles to finish. One of those articles, Article 3, is time sensitive. If we're not able to finish the town meeting, this special town meeting, without voting on Article 3, the selectmen, by law, must pay for and call another special town meeting so that before the end of December, we somehow vote on Article 3. So just as a reminder, we would all appreciate it if you didn't all bolt the hall after Article 1 is voted. Yes, if the checkers who are outside checking in, people will come in so that they can vote. And will everybody who's standing to my left and right please sit down if you want your vote counted? The only exception will be the checkers from outside. They can stand in the rear left since they have to go back outside. As soon as everyone is seated, I'll call for the vote. Town Council has given an opinion that a two-thirds vote is appropriate on this article. We all found a seat back there? Great. You can only vote if you raise your yellow card. All those in favor of Article 1 as shown on the view graph signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? Okay, we're going to take a vote. We're going to take a head count. I need eight volunteers as tellers to come forward, please. If you've spoken on the article at this point, let's not have you be a teller. I need eight people to count. Please come forward. Can I just have your attention for a moment, please? The question has been raised why this requires a two-thirds vote. We'll ask town council for an opinion to the hall.
Mr. Moderator, the statute requiring purchase of land requires a two-thirds vote for the appropriation. In addition, this property is being purchased by the town but is being transferred at the same time to the housing trust, which also under a separate statute requires a two-thirds vote. For those reasons, it's appropriate that this vote be a two-thirds.
Thank you. Just bear with me. I have to give instructions to the tellers. Thank you. Thank you all for your patience. Can I have your attention, please? We're going to take this row by row. You have the first, how many rows? Four. Everybody in rows one and three, rows one and three, who are in favor of Article 1, stand up, hold your card high. If you don't have a yellow card, you will not be counted. Thank you. Rows 5 and 7. Can the teller raise your hand where row 5 is? 5. See the two tellers at the end raising their hand? That's row 5. Look to your left and your right. If you see tellers raising their hand, You stand up if you're in favor and raise your card. Okay. Carmen, what rows do you have? Eight? Can both tellers raise their hand at the ends of row eight? If you're in favor, please stand by raising your cards. Okay, will the tellers who have row 11, or why don't we start from the rear, why don't we start on the back? Don't sit down unless the tellers or I tell you to sit down, please. And now if you go to the tellers on the very back, will the people, where are the tellers in the very rear? 14? Okay, everybody in row 14, will the two tellers at 14 raise your hands? Everybody in that row, please stand up if you're in favor.
Are you still with row 1?
Okay, row 1's all set? Row 1 and 3 may sit down. How are we doing on row 5? We're done. Row 5 can sit down, please. We're still counting row 8? Are you all set with row 8? Okay, row 8 can sit down. And row 14, how are we doing there? You all set, Mr. Gordon, on row 14? You all set? Great, 14 can sit down. Really? Okay. Yeah, we're going to get there. It's taking us a little while. Okay. Everybody who is in favor of Article 1 in rows 2, 4, 6, 9, and 15... please stand up. Will the tellers on each side of those rows raise your hands so the people know what row they're in? So tellers, we're talking about 2, 4, 6, 8. I'm sorry.
What is it?
I'm sorry. 9 and 15. Tell us, you all set with row 2?
Yes.
2 could sit down. Everyone on the stage here, and also sitting at that table, Mark Thompson's table, hello, Barbara, Andrea, if you'd like to vote, now all those in favor on the stage and at the table who are in favor, please signify by raising your cards. Anybody at the table? Mark? Andrea? No, all set. Okay, we all set with this row right here? Row 4? Yeah, row 4 is all set. Thank you. Carmen, what row is all set? Nine can sit down, please. You all sat there, Mr. Gordon? 15 can sit down. Okay, have you counted all your rows? Okay, you two can come forward. Come over here. Row 7, can you tell us, raise your hands, please? Row 7, all those in favor, please stand. Row 11. Row 11, if you're in favor, stand up, please. Tell us who are at row 13, please raise your hands. Tell us at row 13, raise your hands. Do we have any tellers at row 13? Raise your hand so the people in row 13 can stand up, please, if you are in favor of Article 1. Thank you. You all set? Have you finished counting your row? What row remains to you? What? Come on up. Excuse me? Can row 10, would you raise your hand if you're standing by row 10? Where this gentleman is? And that person, and that gentleman is row 10. Could you stand up if you're in favor? Are we set over here? What row are you counting there? Is 10 done? Can 10 and 11 sit down, please? Rows 10 and 11 can sit down. And tell us on my right, what rows do you have left? Okay. Can you ready for row 12? Row 12, please look at the tellers to your right with their hands up. Please rise if you're in favor. Thank you. Mr. Gordon, what numbers are you left with? Okay. Could row 16, and would the tellers raise their hand? Row 16 and the checkers from out by the door, please raise your hands if you're in favor. Okay, and 16 in rows 16 and 17 to my right. Remain standing, please. The tellers are coming to count. Mr. Gordon? Mr. Gordon, are you done with 16 and 17 over here? So 16 and 17 on my left can sit down. The teller over here on my left, how are you doing with this row here? Great. You may sit down. Thank you. Are you all set with these people over here, that row? Yes, you may sit down. Thank you. The three people there. Is there anyone who feels that his affirmative vote has not been counted? Thank you. Are you done with all your rows, or you have another row left? Excuse me? Could you come up here with your partner? Okay, thank you very much. We're now going to do all those opposed. Tellers, would row 1, 3, 5, could the tellers at row 5 raise their hands, please?
We'll go to it.
We are now voting for all those opposed to Article 1. Did we lose the telly? Who's that? Thank you. A teller's job is never done. Just row one. This is the negative votes you're going to count, okay? Row 1, you know where you are. If you're in row 1 and you're against this, please raise your card and stand up. And row 3, where this gentleman just stood up. Is there a teller in row 5? Raise your hand. Teller on row 5, look to your right and left. If you're in row 5 and wish to vote against, stand up and raise your card. 1, 3, 5. Row 7, is there a teller in front of row 7? What? Okay, then row 8. Raise your hand, tell us at row 8. Stand up if you're opposed in row 8. 8. Row 11. Tellers in front of row 11, please raise your cards. Please stand up if you're in row 11 and voting against. And Mr. Gordon back there, what row are you on? Row 13, would you raise your hand? Mimi, would you raise your hand? If you're in 13, raise your cards if you're opposed. Thank you. Anybody on the stage who's opposed, raise your cards. Anybody at the table opposed, raise your cards. Thank you. Row 11 can sit down. Row 8 may sit down. 13 may sit down. 1 may sit down. 3 may sit down. Wonderful. Thank you. You may sit down. Could you get those gentlemen to sit down? Rows 2. Row 2, if you're opposed, stand up. Row 4. Who's got row 4? Okay. Rows 2, would you, let's start with row 4. Could you stand in front of row 4? Can you just stand, hello? Row 1, Peller? Phil, can you go to row 4 and raise your hand? Row 4, please stand up if you're opposed. Row, could the teller stand in front of row 6, please? Raise your hands. Row 6, opposed. Row 8, the teller standing in front of row 8, please. I'm sorry? Row 8 is done. Have we counted row 9? Row 9, could you raise your hand if you're in front of row 9, tellers? And the next teller, what row are you in front of? Row 12, would you raise your hand, please? If you're opposed in row 12. Mr. Gordon, what row do you have? 14, could you raise your hand, Mr. Gordon and Mimi? Row 14, if you're opposed, stand and raise your cards. Interesting, we were looking into electronic voting, where you'd all have an electronic device at your seat, and within 1 minute of the vote, we'd have the tallies. Row 2 can sit. Now it doesn't seem like that much money, huh? Row 4, we're going to ask you to stand if you're opposed, even though you stood up before, possibly. Row 4, where she... Could you raise your hand, please? Row 4, if you're opposed, could you stand... Row 4. Thank you. We're all set. Are you all done or you have another row? All 4 rows? Thank you. Row 12 may sit down. Row 9 may sit down. 14 may sit down. What row are you going to? To my left, over here, could rows 14, Mr. Gordon, is it 14 or 15? Rows 15 through 17, the tellers are coming over here to show you which rows they are. Just on my left side, could you, all of you and the checkers who are opposed stand and raise your yellow cards? We'll come and do the other one next. Oh, wonderful. What is it? What rows? Yeah. You, including yourself. Hang on a second. Could row 7 and 10, could the tellers at the end of row 7 raise your hand? And could the tellers at the end of row 10 raise your hand? Could both of those rows please stand? The tellers have asked me to announce two things. Once you've voted, you cannot change your seat, and also you cannot leave the hall until this vote is completed. Everyone, 15 through 17 in the checkers on the left, please be seated. We're all set. Row 10 can sit down. In the rear right, could rows, tellers, could you show them where rows 15 and 17 are in the rear right, my right? Could you stand up if you're opposed? Six, seven. Yes? Who's row 13 over there on this side? What? No, they've counted row 13 over here. Where's row 5 through 7? Mary? What's your numbers? Okay, we have just on row 12, would the tellers raise their hands at row 12? If you are in row 12, where the tellers are now, and you're opposed to Article 2, please rise and hold your cards. Are there any abstentions? If so, please raise your hand. Are there any other abstentions? I can't see. One, two. Any others? Yes, I have one here, one there. Any other abstentions other than two? Thank you. There are a total of 310. Before I announce the vote, again, I'll ask you not to bolt the hall. We have two more articles that are not going to take that long. We have a total vote of 310 people voting, 184 in the affirmative, 124 in the negative, two abstentions. It does not have a two-thirds vote. Okay, we're on Article 2. Can I have the presenter for Article 2? Selectman Bill Keller to make a motion on Article 2.
I move to appropriate the sum of $10,000 to be expended under the direction of the Permanent Building Committee to fund architectural and engineering services or other services for the purpose of updating the preliminary feasibility study for the construction of a new police station and or renovation of the existing police station, said sum to be raised by transfer from fiscal year 08 account 01221011/511100 police salaries.
Does that receive a second? It does. Before I'll just quickly state the difference between the article as it appears in your warrant and the motion that's on the view graph are twofold. One, there's a number there now that wasn't in your warrant. It's $10,000. And the second difference is, unlike your warrant, this motion includes renovation of the existing police station. Yes, Mr. Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This proposal tonight is to help us address the problem with the facility at the police station and the fact that the proposal from last annual town meeting did not receive a favorable vote at the polls. The selectmen have created a blue ribbon committee to provide a mechanism for thoughtful and public review of the best alternatives for dealing with the problems of the town's current police station. This 11-member committee will be examining the prior planning that went into the proposed $8.2 million station that was rejected by the voters at the October 16th special election. These options will range from what it may take to continue using the existing station on the existing site to construction of a new station at the proposed site on Hudson Road or possible other sites in town or other viable alternatives. To do this work, we are asking for an appropriation of $10,000 to continue having available to the town the services of the architectural firm we have been working with on this project. This firm already knows the issues. They know of the building's deficiencies. They know of the site conditions of the existing site and the proposed site. They happen to be the same architectural firm that designed our police station. They will be able to draw on their knowledge, and they will assist them to provide technical assistance to both the Permanent Building Committee and the Blue Ribbon Committee. We are confident that these funds will be well spent and will provide the technical expertise to bring a viable proposal to address the police station to our annual town meeting next March. These funds will be transferred from the fiscal year 08 police department budget, where due to the fact that two new officers had joined the department midway through the fiscal year, there are some savings in the salary line, and we're able to use that money. We ask for a favorable vote.
Thank you. Chairman of the Finance Committee, Chuck Woodard.
FinCom recommends approval of this article.
Okay. Did you want to say anything further at this time? This would be the time to do it.
No.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Selectman, I assume that since you proposed the article, you're in favor of this article?
Yes.
Although anyone who wished to be heard on Article 2? Yes, this gentleman right here. Could you pass him a mic?
Mr. Moderator, Hank Surrett, Longfellow Road. Now that the voters have twice defeated the police department's dream for a new palace, the second time resoundingly, it's amazing and sad that our public officials have appointed a committee to inquire into how the voters can be persuaded to vote for a variation of what they've already voted against twice. Perhaps they feel that the voters might support a police palace that costs only two or three times the price of a McMansion instead of just four times that cost. The voters do not need or want this kind of facility, and they certainly don't want to pay for it. Both Wayland and Acton built large police facilities, and then they had to staff them up to fill them, and they still sit half empty. I submit that our public officials are asking the wrong questions. Instead of attempting to resuscitate or regurgitate an idea that the voters have twice defeated, they should be asking, how can we work within our present means to provide the limited amount of police services the town actually needs? Can we outsource the task of holding prisoners for short periods of time by entering into agreements with our neighboring communities like Framingham and Wayland that have substantial new cell facilities? Can we eliminate our own dispatch operation by entering into agreements with other communities to do this centrally? It certainly would be technically feasible to run one dispatch facility that covered a great number of towns in our community, in our area, from Acton to Westboro, Concord, Lincoln. Many large businesses run call centers that handle telephone operations far more vast than this. Many gas and electric companies, for example, handle all their dispatch for the entirety of the state out of a single facility. Can the police department use other space in town for their meetings? This is the hall the selectmen use for their meetings is empty except when they're there. There's a large meeting hall in the library. It's only about 200 yards from the existing police station. It would be superfluous to duplicate those kinds of meeting spaces. If they want an exercise facility, well, Longfellow is down the road, and I'm sure Laurie Hamill would be delighted to sell memberships to those police officers who want to remain fit. Can we downsize the police department so that it fits our actual limited needs and available facilities? Do we need as many policemen as we've got? I don't think we do. They seem to have an awful lot of time to sit beside by the road late at night and do nothing but bother motorists.
Mr. Surratt, the question before the hall is, should we spend $10,000 to renovate or build a new police station? Could you get to that part,
sure,
please?
Sure, and I'm asking that we oppose it. Should we downsize our police department so that it fits our limited needs? Many towns use part-time police officers when they have additional needs. No new proposal should be here to build a new police station or consider spending money on a police station until we've thoroughly studied how we can live within our existing means. There's a broader public policy question here where the voters have twice said no to this, the second time resoundingly. The elected officials need to listen to the voters. The voters have overridden Prop 2.5 when projects like a new high school or educational services are at issue. Education's a high priority for this town. Lavish headquarters for the police department is not a priority. When elected officials do not listen to the voters express their ire, often using a blunt instrument. Prop 2.5 was adopted overwhelmingly because the voters believed that their limited resources were being squandered. Attempting to force through another police palace effort, it seems to me, would evoke voter anger by those voters who worked hard with me to defeat the last two proposals. I therefore ask that this be defeated.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard for or against Article 2? Yes, gentleman in the fourth row. Can you pass that right behind you, Mr. Okay.
You will have heard me in the previous town meeting make some of these points, but I've added further facts. The facts have been absent from most of the folks behind me in this.
Could I just ask your name and address for the record?
Stuart Lovell, 58 Hudson Road. I've been in Sudbury 15 years, and in that time, I guess, spent $150,000, I guess, of town taxes, very little of which came back to me in services, but I don't regret that. The case made out by town management for the new police station has been irresponsibly deceptive and misleading at every turn. Just recently, town management painted a picture of a police department overwhelmed by a growing workload. You may have seen the town crier just before the election. What a coincidence that it came out that week. The headline trumpeted, "Police Station at Breaking Point." I'm paraphrasing because I didn't actually keep the darn thing. When in fact nothing could be further from the truth. I am curious who fed that rubbish to the newspaper. It could have only either been the selectman or the town manager or the chief of police. I would like to know who did that. Let's establish some truths for a change. In 1990, these are all in public domain, there were 290 arrests in Sudbury. But by 2005, that number had dropped from 290 to 270. And according to the 2006 town report, that number dropped again in 2006 to 225. So 290 to 225. In 1990, there were 67 instances of protective custody in Sudbury. But by 2005, this number had dropped from the 67 to 14. According to the town report, that number dropped again in 2006 to 13. So, my friend, you really don't need to worry about protective custody. It's one a month. In 1990, there were 917 motor vehicle accidents in Sudbury. By 2005, that number had dropped from 917 to 444. And this number dropped again in 2006 to 367. The only category of incidents that increased from 1990 to 2005 in the police department's workload was, guess what, motor vehicle citations, which grew from 2,726 in 1990 to 6,952 in 2005. As this is all public domain, and I'm happy to prove all these facts. They're all sitting in my folder over here. As I said, facts have been significantly absent from the folks behind me in all this. As a reflection of this declining workload, the number of patrol officers also declined in that period from 22 in 1990 to 20 in 2005. I have to just digress here. I just can't resist this. Assuming roughly 7 or 8 folks a shift and assuming half of those are sitting in their cars issuing speeding tickets, that leaves about 3 people actually in the police station. The 18,000 square foot police station that is proposed, I do hope that in the budget is some walkie-talkies so those folks can find themselves if there's ever any kind of incident that like the attack that needs us to have all those rooms, like a 60-person conference room. 60-person conference room, that's in the plan. And we're going to put some more money up for this architect? Well, all those facts come from two sources. The town's own report into the new police station, and the town's 2006 town report. Significantly absent in this process, as I say, has been any truths from the people behind me. However, there were two completely stunning moments of truth in the last town meeting, and they didn't get any mention, I think, in the town crier. Firstly, the selectman said, and I'm going to paraphrase, but I'm going to get it pretty close to right, well, we've got two proposals in front of us. One is 7 and something million, one is 8 and something million. And we ran the numbers, and we decided it's only another $15 per person if we go for the 8 million, so let's go for the 8 million. What a disgraceful, disgraceful statement. I can just spend a million in, what, 90 seconds? Just like that. It's your money, though, so it doesn't really bother me too much. The second, even worse and even less publicised truth came from the town manager, who said, well, the plan really here is we're going to do one of these every 4 or 5 years. So, although the warrant had the one word underlined in the warrant, the word temporary. No mention of how long it's temporary, by the way, 20 years temporary. So this building would be roughly $140-$150 increase in your taxes for 20 years, roughly $3,000. But the town manager said, I'm thinking we'll do one of these every 4 or 5 years. We've got a bunch of houses that we need to fix. Buildings we're going to go fix. So the plan is actually to have a whole bunch of these. We'll have a whole rolling program. Spin the numbers, $10,000 at least. Sorry?
Hang on, that was addressed to me, sir. It's okay, your time is up. But
no, it isn't.
Excuse me. I'll make that determination.
Okay.
Let me remind everyone in the hall once again. We're going far afield. The motion before the hall is whether or not you wish to appropriate $10,000 to be expended on the direction of the Permanent Building Committee to update the feasibility study for the construction of a new police station or the renovation and or the renovation of the existing police station. So from now on, I'm gonna be a little stricter about addressing this motion, and the point of order is well taken. Sir, if you wish to continue, you have another 15 seconds to wrap up, and you have to address the motion.
Well, I think all of this was germane, because the real issue is whether the town wants to keep on spending money like water or to bring in a town management, new selectman, new chief of police, new town manager, who will in fact show some sense of fiscal responsibility.
Thank you. Sir? Anybody else wish to? Yes. In the rear, this gentleman standing up.
My name is Phil Connors. I live on Dudley Road. And a quick question, Mr. Moderator. I was recently appointed to the Blue Ribbon Committee. Now, can I talk here as an individual, or is that going to be a violation?
No, you're free to speak. First okay. Amendment, right. U.S. Constitution.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Obviously, I don't represent the committee. We did have one meeting, but as I understand this, it will give us it's $10,000, but I think it would be spent well to find out certain things. For example, can the existing station be renovated, possibly, to meet the goals? And I think it would be very wise if you would just, as an individual anyway, I have some work to do, and it would help me a lot if we could just find out more about the existing plan. And there's been a lot of good work done by the committees here, and we need to review it. And I can't say too much because I'm speaking just for myself. I ask you, let us please use the $10,000 to go to different options.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to speak? Yes, right over there. I'm going to let it go just for a few more, and then you can repeat it in about 5 minutes. Yes, on the aisle here.
Paul Pegas, 231 Knobscot Road. Just a question. Since the article has been changed to say feasibility study for the construction of the new station and or renovation, $10,000 doesn't go very far with an architect. Where will the priority be? Again, redoing the plan or renovation?
Yes, the selectman.
That would be true. $10,000 wouldn't be going very far if we were starting from scratch. But I think it was three town meetings ago we allocated $25,000 for the initial feasibility study. So we're building on that work to redraw plans to come up with a more appropriate solution.
And will it be more or less equally to looking at a new construction versus?
We have asked the committee to review the work that's been done thus far and to make viable recommendations. We have not set any parameters on them, and they'll go about their work as they see fit, which is what we ask for volunteers.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on the Article 2? Yes, over here. Stand up, please. Patty, could you get a mic? Oh, there you go. Yes, Mr. Williamson, can you? Somebody. Get a mic.
Michael Pincus, 25 Blueberry Hill Lane. Some of this seems to be fairly redundant. We've already gone through a feasibility study a few years ago. We've presumably already looked at the option of renovating the existing station. I'm also a little concerned that it's the same architectural firm that is being proposed for updating this study. They don't seem to have listened to the real requirements the last time. I'm not real confident that they're going to look at the reality this time either. Having walked through the police station during the open house, I completely understand why they need a new facility, and in theory, I am in favor of that. This process, though, kind of bothers me, and I think that this is just throwing $10,000 away. I think that to a large extent, we already know what changes need to be done to the plan that was presented before. I don't believe that it should cost $10,000 to make those changes. In fact, I think I could probably paraphrase them right now if you want to give me the $10,000. So, unfortunately, I think I'm going to have to vote against this. I would like to see the process move forward a little more efficiently, and hopefully in the spring, maybe that can happen with a new article.
Thank you. The question has been called. Anyone who wishes to speak and add new information to the discussion, please raise your card. I see none. Okay. There's no need to call the question. We're going to move forward with the vote. Well, why don't we do it just for the record? All those in favor of calling the question signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes by well more than two-thirds. We're now voting on Article 2 that you see in front of you in the view graph. All those in favor of Article, and this is a majority vote, all those in favor of Article 2 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? Okay, I think it passed, but I'm going to take another vote. All those in favor of Article 2, raise your cards, please. Anybody to this side of the AV window, put your cards down. I've got you. Everyone and I have to say, everybody in the first three rows over here, put your cards down. Everyone else, keep your cards up, please. Thank you. All those opposed, please raise your cards. Yes, by my hand count, it's 154 in favor and 83 against. I declare it's well more than a majority. We'll now go on to Article 3. Do I have a motion under Article 3, please?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. Article 3, collective bargaining funding. Move to appropriate the sum of $52,000 for the purpose of funding the FY07 portion of the arbitration award, providing for payment to fire department employees in the recent arbitration proceedings with the Sudbury Permanent Firefighters Association, Local 2023 IAFF, AFL-CIO, directed by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Joint Labor Management Committee, said sum to be raised by transfer from free cash.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Dravinsky.
Again, thank you, Mr. Moderator. In accordance with the provisions of Chapter 589 of the Acts of 1987, the legislative act that created the Joint Labor Management Committee
the Board of Selectmen, acting as the town executive body, unanimously recommends approval and funding of the arbitrator's award. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
I'd like to make a few comments in addition.
Please.
To it. We recommend approval of this settlement because it is in keeping with the other contract settlements for that period, and we quite frankly believe it's a matter of good faith to do so. But I'd also like to make a statement that the FinCom crafted just prior to this meeting regarding the whole employee compensation issue. Our preliminary analysis shows that the cost of benefits and salaries for all town and school employees over the last two fiscal years rose by 16%, not including the cost of this contract. Within this, salaries per employee rose 10.6%, and total compensation per employee rose 13.8%. We do not believe that this is sustainable when compensation makes up almost 80% of the town's expenses. As a result, we will be looking for substantial sensitivity to the town's financial issues in the next series of union contract negotiations that will be starting next year. It is our intent to work closely with the cost centers over the coming budget season to agree on a strategy that will work for all parties. In particular, our discussion about the new budget will include a frank conversation about how to reduce the growth, not the absolute amount, but the growth in compensation. We encourage all of you to attend the budget hearings in January, to read the town warrant, ask questions, and be informed. And also, please give us your feedback. We're trying to represent your best interest. Thank you.
Thank you. Selectman, I assume you support it since you presented it. Thank you. Percentage vote on this article is a majority. The differences between what you see on the view graph and what you saw in your warrant is one that the number is now in this article, $52,000. There was no number in the warrant article. Secondly, this states that it was arbitration with the firefighters union. And thirdly, that the money is to be raised by transfer from free cash. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 3? Is that a hand up right there? Yes, could you stand up, please? Could you pass the mic to this gentleman?
Sean White, 27 Spring Street. I'd like to hopefully push people towards voting for this, the funding of the monies for the firefighters. It, with the arbitration, they looked at the different communities in the area, felt that this was fair to go ahead with funding for the firefighters. I feel it's a reasonable increase. I feel that the panel up there impassionately went for the people that needed housing that would fall into the same employment range, but then there was some tussle throughout the past negotiation that they didn't want to pay these folks, our public defenders, firefighters. I honestly think that 3% over the next year and the 2 years after that is reasonable of an increase. I don't know what the battle was back and forth, but looking at Wayland, looking at Weston, looking at the different communities of the same size, they're getting equal amounts in pay raises to this amount. I feel it's well worth the vote to go forward. I think we have a good fire department. I think we have a good crew. I don't think we should be competing with other communities for these firefighters, which I have noticed that a lot of different larger communities are poaching the smaller communities for the firefighters, then we'd have then larger costs to retrain them. Try to keep the same people here, like the teachers, like the firefighters, to keep the community, people that know the community, in place. I think it's worthwhile funding this for these folks. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you hang on to that mic? Was there someone behind you that wished to speak that raised his card? No. Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 3? Yes, right here on the aisle.
Daniel Sant, 159 Knobscot. The $52,000 is the FY07 portion. What's the total amount of the award, and how many years is it going to take to pay?
Town manager have that information? Yeah, while we're waiting for that answer, we'll take another statement. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 3? I see no hands. So as soon as the town manager is able to answer the question, which he is now, we'll then vote.
I want to make sure I understood the question correctly. The award amount, as we said, for FY07 for the retro is $52,000. Our best guess at this point, because the COLA goes up in the second year, looks like about $67,000. And then in the last year, about $70,000 escalates along that line. Is that what the question was, the dollar amount in each year?
Thank you very much. Seeing no other hands, we'll now vote. Is that a question that you have? Can you stand, please? We need you to have the mic for the record. And just repeat your name and address, please. In comparison, Sean White, 27 Spring Street. In comparison, if we were to look at the department heads, someone like the town manager or possibly the fire chief, in comparison, what were their percentage raises? Do we know the answer to that question?
I can give you for the department heads that report to me. They're the same, except this one's higher in the third year. We haven't set forth the 09 for non-collective bargaining groups. For the other collective bargaining groups in year three, it's 2.5. This one's 2.5%. And then on January 1, another 1.5%. So this one's slightly higher. Non-unionized employees, that hasn't been determined for FY09 yet. And for the past years, row 7 and 08, they're the same.
Thank you.
We tend to treat the employees.
And yours, ma'am.
I don't have that in front of me. I think the selectman would better answer that.
You're not.
2.75%.
For the town manager?
Yes, sir.
Sir, all questions go through the chair. You all set?
Yes, thank you, sir.
Thank you. We're now going to... Yes, can you hand this gentleman a mic? Thank you.
I would like to...
name and address for the record, please.
Oh, sorry, again, Stuart Lovell, 58 Hudson Road. I'm not sure how what you just said aligns to the statement in the town warrant. The town warrant for the police chief said that the appropriated sum for FY07 was $115,845, and the town request for FY08 was $130,265. 15,000 increase on 115 is not 3%.
Yes, town manager.
If the question is the explanation of that, there was the cost of living, was that amount for that year? We hire professional personnel analysts who come in and study our whole system, go through each one of the different grades, kind of do the similar process we do with collective bargaining, where we look at the comparables, we do all of that. We found that our top-level people, police chief, fire chief, et cetera, had fallen below their peers, and so we did the same thing. There's a one-time adjustment. That's not the COLA, that's the one-time adjustment. Then you'll see in the next year it settles down, it's just the COLA. We do this periodically about each group. We do a different group. We did clerical the year before that, mid-level supervisors the year before that.
Thank you. Any other questions on Article 3? Okay, we're ready for a vote. This is a majority vote. All those in favor of Article 3, signify by raising your cards. Thank you. Those opposed, it's an overwhelming majority. It passes. Before we adjourn, I'd like to thank you all for coming out on a very cold night, and I'll take a motion to dissolve this special town meeting.
So moved.
Is there a second? All those in favor, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. Thank you very much. This special town meeting is dissolved.